Hello, and welcome to Connectivity, episode 359, Back to Normalcy. We had to go back, listen to the past couple episodes. There's a Star Fox one that's in video, if you're a patron. There's like a whole Star Fox documentary that got made. We talked about Twilight Princess, did Cover to Direct, and now we're going to do a good old-fashioned episode made by you, the listeners, all three of you who sent in listener mail. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan. Joining me, as always, John Raritan.
The fun thing about those last few episodes is that they were all recorded, like, out of order and, like, in advance. So this feels extra weird.
Yeah, we'll give the production order of them at some point. But right now, just do it in the airing order. When we do the Connectivity rewatch in advance of Mandalorian season 35, we'll make sure you have the right order.
You have to listen to Connectivity in machete order.
Yeah. but you don't need to worry about watching Book of Boba Fett. You're good. Just roll with it.
you kind of do.
Have either of you guys seen the new episode of Mando yet?
Oh yes. Yeah, I'm here
also
too.
Also, Alex is here.
Yeah. Yes, Alex DeFreitas also here.
What was that question?
Have you guys seen the new episode of Mando?
I didn't realize a new episode of Mando came out
today.
You know what, man? I was aware. I went up watching it this morning because my dog woke me up early. And I was like, I have about 40 minutes. That's how long I heard it was. I'll watch it before I go to work.
Remember the glory days of watching Andor and have all the episodes be like actually an hour long? That was cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's freaking Filoni and Favreau are like, nah, 30 minutes. You'll be lucky 29? If you get an extra five.
Can we do under a half an hour?
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine. There are some things in the first episode where they kind of like recap what happened in the three Mandalorian episodes of Book of Boba Fett that is just hysterical.
Oh, that's funny.
Because if you kind of like think about it too hard, you're like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Why is he having this conversation again? When he already had it with this person.
Yep.
Oh, it's not like they clipped it up.
Well, that's the thing. They did. But like, then they also still have Mando be like, all right, so about this whole exiled thing.
And also he's just like, what happened to Moff Gideon? It's like, bro, you literally got told, you told somebody else that before you had this conversation.
Apparently, like Book of Boba Fett spans like 2 years.
Many millennia.
Did you see that? Yeah. Like Favreau's like, oh yeah, the first two seasons of Mandalorian take place over like 2 years, and then there's a 2 year gap between season two and three, and that's where Book of Boba Fett takes place. And I'm like, was there? Like,
well, no. So also the first two seasons of Mandalorian takes over like some year. Like, there's no.
Yeah, it takes place over multiple years.
We could be after the sequel trilogy by this point. I have no idea.
Yeah, I have. I commented on Twitter that I need star dates at the beginning of every Star Wars thing to just be like, all right, where are we?
I saw that and I was like, I thought they took place over the course of maybe a couple months.
That's what it feels like when you're watching it. It feels pretty much one thing after the other. But
I mean, like, I can definitely buy that the first two seasons of Mandalorian probably took over a longer span of time than it feels like, especially with every episode being like a half an hour long. That I get. It's just some of the stuff of like the gap of time between season two and season three, especially the Book of Boba Fett, like, no idea.
Yeah. Well, and did you see his reason why?
Because it's been 2 years since the last season.
He said that he didn't really want to do anything with Grogu while he wasn't with Din. And so he was just didn't. And he was like, I don't know. Which I don't think any of that counts as spoilers because it's like the first episode, but
yeah,
or it's like the setup for the first episode.
Maybe we'll talk about it later. We haven't Andor, I feel like it's one of those shows that, I mean, I could definitely talk about Andor, but it's also like that was a show that I didn't watch quite as it aired, whereas Mandalorian is definitely one that I feel like I'll probably have to, even if I think Andor is a better show. Just because of the nature of Mandalorian is a lot more about the, like, what surprise might be here? Whereas Andor is just extremely good television.
Yeah, Andor is a different... I mean, it's trying to do a different thing.
A better thing, maybe even.
I'm not... I wouldn't say that I like it better universally, but, you know, it's it's like if you feel like it's like if you're watching The Godfather and also like Die Hard. Like those movies aren't it's hard to compare them because they're not trying to do the same thing. And that's kind of what Andor and Mandalorian are.
Yeah, no, like I'd agree with that. Like I've definitely I think I'm maybe the proper term is Andor pilled at this point. Like, that is I'm just like, can all of Star Wars just be that? That's what I like, please. So Mandalorian definitely lost a little bit of its sheen. It's almost like his Beskar armor got a little scuffed. But like I'm still here. I still watched it the day it came out. And I'm sure there's going to be like some like, you know, Leo pointing meme thing that happens in a couple episodes where like Ezra shows up or some shit.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be like, I'm all the way in.
Yeah.
And that stuff is cool, but like it's definitely Filoni building up his own little universe, his pocket universe within Star Wars. And Andor's like, fun. We got this one story we're going to tell and it's going to be good all the way through.
Yeah, I want to live in Filoni's pocket universe. So that's fair. Mando is like, and I think Andor is like one of the greatest pieces of Star Wars media I've ever watched, but it is like kind of Mando to me feels a bit more like Star Wars. Like it's more fun. It feels more like a exciting adventure show for the whole family, which is like what Star Wars was. And Andor is very much the Twilight Princess of Star Wars, where it's you've grown up, get ready for dark, edgy Star Wars. And it's awesome, but it has a very different tone to it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we live in literally we live in a world where they both exist.
Yes.
And I think I can confirm. You know, we'll get Andor season two. That'll, you know, but put a hopefully a follow up how good the first season was. And that's going to, I mean, that, yeah, I think there is no wiggle room. I think they're just doing two seasons of Andor. Which feels like the right idea because it probably doesn't have the highest viewership. So
that I would like to know.
Let them tell their story.
yeah. It would be interesting to know exactly what the viewership is for that show.
Yeah. Like I recall hearing things like it wasn't terrible. It just wasn't like as high, but I think it might have gone up as the show went on as word of mouth spread.
Oh yeah, because yeah, the hype around that show once it started was pretty nuts.
But yeah, anyway, maybe Mandalorian does some things. Maybe we'll do some Mando talk, some spoiler Mando talk. Get Ryan back for an episode or something. But for now, we're going to talk about listener mail, and I guess maybe we'll work in talking about some games we've been playing. But let's go to the first listener mail from James Troxel, who says, got some listener mail here for you from your longtime listener, James Tiberius Kirk. I've been playing a lot of Sega Saturn lately. It got me thinking. I realized Sega probably doesn't mean anything special to anyone under 30 at this point, which is kind of sad. Do you gents have any forgotten consoles you have a soft spot for? Wii U doesn't count. For me, it's Saturn, which I had before in 64 and 3DO. My buddy's dad had a 3DO, and it's something else. Any of you have a weird forgotten system you dug back in the day? Engage, Virtual Boy, Neo Geo Pocket, that wish got more love. Share your stories. Though prices have escalated for all of these systems, I feel like outside the small niche, spending too much on old games, nobody cares anymore. Time is cruel. I kind of wish Sega was a big player still.
Yeah, I think Sega is kind of the obvious, like, I mean, there's the Genesis, obviously, that like did do very well.
But I feel like Genesis isn't a forgotten console.
No, but there's definitely, I mean, I feel like you can pretty much do, if you consider like the 32X or the CD as their own consoles, then those for sure.
When it comes, like thinking about it from a personal perspective, like I guess 32X, the only game I've really played on it is Chaotix, which is okay.
Do you want to hang out and play 32X? I love the 32X. It's got a whole bunch of those like flat shaded polygon kind of games.
Was the Hummingbird game is Calibri or whatever? That's a CD game, isn't it?
Yes.
I have at a PAX East, I played some Sega CD games, which I think I like played through Night Trap and Sewer Shark, both of which I think are now available on Switch. I forget if Sewer Shark or no, Sewer Shark, I think it's on that new, maybe Sewer Shark, I feel like got re-released somewhere in the past year or two. I can't think of where, but I mean, I think like a forgotten console to me that I learned I don't actually care to play much more of is the Atari Jaguar. I was really excited for that in the Atari collection, and then played some of those games. It was like, no, I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, with the Atari theme, then I've talked about it before, but I grew up with an Atari Lynx. They're Game Boy killer. And that thing was just, it was the size of a Steam Deck, and it was awesome.
Was it bigger or smaller than a Game Gear?
It's wider to me.
I think it is wider and roughly the same height.
Okay.
Having held a Steam Deck, it's very comparable, including like all of the buttons being in odd places.
The Steam Deck, way more comfortable than I thought it would be, but also all the buttons are in weird places.
The cool thing that the Lynx did that the Switch would eventually do is that like you could, it was made to be like flippable. So you could play it upside down. So like people could be playing on both sides of it for multiplayer games, which was awesome. And that's, you know, you see that now with some Switch stuff with the like Joy-Cons being able to be mirrored. Yeah, it was a great system.
I think with this question, it's tough for me because I wound up being such a Nintendo kid from a young age that like, I guess he does call that Virtual Boy, but that wasn't even one that I like played contemporaneously. Like that was, I got laid off from a temp job and like visited a friend, and like in my like sad about losing my job, I wound up buying a Virtual Boy that actually did lead to me getting my first freelance piece posted on 1UP.com. I wrote about the Virtual Boy that I had bought like a month or two prior because it was before the 3DS came out. And it was something about how you know, Nintendo's bomb of a system can inform its next handheld. Wario Land's very good. I have a soft spot for the Virtual Boy, even if it's a clumsy, dumb system.
Yeah.
And the Game Gear, I did have one of those as a kid. My endearing memories are mediocre Sonic games and a pretty rad Ren and Stimpy game. That I played through on my analog pocket because I got the Game Gear adapter for that. Still love that game. It is definitely like C tier mascot platformer, but it just feels really good in the animation and sound effects are great.
Did either of you play games on an iPod Classic?
On a classic
click wheel?
No. I played stuff on the Touch, but not on the Classic.
There was a rhythm game that was pretty, I forget the name of it, but you could play it with like your songs that you had on it.
Yes, you would play your own songs and it would generate the chart for you.
Yeah, it was really good.
Square Enix made Song Summoner, which was like a tactics game where you would like put in your song and then it would create, I think it was like a gacha pull almost. And I don't know what about the song generated what types of heroes for you. But that game, that was pretty cool to have like, almost like a tactics game on a click wheel iPod. There was a Spore game that I played, and I think like some version of Breakout. So I'm not sure. I had like the curiosity to go back and try and play that, but I don't have an iPod, and I wouldn't know how to put those games on there if I could.
Well, and like a lot of that stuff like doesn't have emulators for it. Like there's old like cell phone games that I remember from when I was a kid that like there's just no. As far as I can find, there's like no emulation for it or way to play those anymore.
A tweet that came, like somebody retweeted, I feel like it might have been like something from people related to Video Game History Foundation about how somebody really liked the Super Monkey Ball game that came out when the iOS store, the App Store launched.
Mm-hmm.
And that game is no longer playable on modern iPhones and modern iOS. And they basically built an emulator just to play that game because they had a really fond memories of it.
Oh, neat.
But it was just highlighting about how like the preservation for all of those old games is a debacle.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have memories of trying to find like an old Metal Gear Solid, like basically a shooting gallery kind of game for early iOS and not being able to find it later in life.
Yeah.
If you can find Hoggy for iOS, play that. It's a cool puzzle platformer. I think it's still around.
As far as forgotten consoles that I guess like I never had, because it I don't think you could in America. Satellaview. Which was like the Super Nintendo. Was it an add-on or was it just like you downloaded shit to a cartridge? I forget.
The Satellaview, I thought it was just a cartridge. But like I don't know.
Yeah, because I'm going to butcher it because I'm not going to look it up because it's kind of a little bit irrelevant to this discussion. But the Satellaview was a thing on the Super Famicom where you could download games. I believe there's like an alternate version of Zelda that's like Link to the Past, but it's the original Zelda game that I've never played.
I've played. So yes, I think Zelda, I played some sort of. Called. Yeah, I don't remember how I played some sort of. I think somebody did like essentially a port of that to PC. So I didn't play it in an emulator. This was years and years and years ago, but I have played that and that was cool.
But the one with that I found, it was like just fun to mess around with this game through, you know, a waking dream, which, you know what? I don't feel bad about emulating a Satellaview game.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to come after you.
Sweet Hakun, which is an old indie Zero game, which if you look to my bomb of a video that I made around Sushi Striker launch about the history of indie Zero, I played that game for the purposes of that video to get a little bit of footage and wound up playing like an hour or two of it. It's like a cute little puzzle platformer, but it was indie's I believe it was indie Zero's first game, and it like we never got to play it, and it's a neat little game, and now those folks are making Theater Rhythm.
Yeah,
and I want to honorable mention the Wonder Swan just as a whole, because it's a interesting look at what a more direct follow-up to the original Game Boy would have been. It's also it's the last thing that Gunpei Yokoi made, and there's a pretty good Klonoa game on it too.
Oh, I forgot about the Klonoa game.
Can I preemptively just say DSiWare?
I mean, that is DSiWare, I realize, is already something that I'm horrendously passionate about that no one really gives a fuck about.
Yeah. That's how you wind up with a forgotten system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was wild. Like I put together, because there was that like that brief moment. It was before the shutdown was announced, but it was funny because I recall like DSiWare like went down briefly.
Yep.
And people were like, it's going to be a couple more years. And then like Nintendo announced like a month later being like, next year, it's all dying. But I did do like a believe the post is like, I will always love you, DSiWare, which is true. And like going through that was just such a rush of memories, because that was, I got a DSi the day it came out. It was, you know, at a point in my life where I had the ability to put a credit card onto my DSi shop account and just spend relentlessly.
Mm-hmm.
And I got like everything I could and wanted on that, which, I mean, there's a lot of shit there, so it's not like it's all good, but there's so many gems that I feel like they're gonna get lost to time, like even like a Kappish Trail, Starship Defense, Xscape, Trajectile, Art Style Pictobits.
I wonder what percentage of Q Games library is exclusive to that platform, because it feels like it's a lot.
Yeah. Oh, Digidrive. Digidrive's so good.
I'm going to look up their games, their gamography.
And then 64DD. A lot of the stuff is just like things that never came to America. I thought about getting a Saturn, but I've realized that there's just not a critical mass of games that I could realistically get for it. Like, do I want to play Panzer Dragoon Saga? Yes. I also don't have like several $100,000 or whatever it costs to get Panzer Dragoon Saga.
And the only thing I would want a Saturn for is Shining Force 3.
Yeah, that's another one. Like, it's things that I would play, but I'm not going to spend a lot of money to play.
Well, and with Shining Force 3 in particular, that's one where you really would just be better off emulating it, because then you can play the entirety of Shining Force 3 and not just the one third of it that we got in the US.
Yeah.
There's only four games in, and you'd listed all of them for DSiWare from Q Games.
Because
I thought there were more than that.
Maybe the best.
They're like the four best games. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like when I think of DSiWare, I think of like Xscape and Starship Defense and Trajectile and all the art style games. Of which they made Digidrive, which I think Pictobits is probably my favorite of the DSiWare art style games, but Digidrive is very close behind. Yeah, and 64DD is one of those ones that I've stared at a convention. I don't even remember what the price was, but it was absurd. 64DD, not cheap. but I believe it was like an inbox 64DD with a couple of the games.
I wish they'd integrate some of that stuff and the Satellaview stuff into NSO more.
Yeah.
Like, because there's like F-Zero on N64 has disk drive stuff, doesn't it? Or was that an unreleased thing?
I think the...
I was thinking it had like it extra did. Levels that yeah. were in the disk drive, like yeah. an add-on for it.
I think the thing with that is that like even if you look at like how there's some of the Famicom releases have on NSO, like I mean, well, like some of those were just the stuff with like Metroid having different sound channels and things.
Yeah,
but I think the problem is that even in Japan, the 64DD kind of tanked. So it's not like there's a ton of nostalgia there. It's basically just like Western curiosity is what powers the 64DD.
Yeah, it does seem like you could. I don't know if you could generate subscriptions based on that, but it would, you know, it's that same thing of like Star Fox 2, or if you were yeah. to do like Lunar Chase, of like put something on there that I don't just casually also have access to other places.
Get me Dosha the Giant.
Damn yes. it. Yes.
Giles Goddard's work must live on.
Yes.
I believe, yeah, I believe he worked on Dosha the Giant. Right?
It's in his credits, but then so is Vortex, and he didn't work on that. So.
Well, you know what? We're getting up to an anniversary for Dosha the Giant. Get Giles back in the interview.
We'll just sit down. We'll do interviews for every game he ever worked on, and then we can just put him out over the course of the next few years.
Like, just enjoyable to hear him talk.
Yeah. Did you see all the videos from the Chuhai Labs Star Fox anniversary party?
It looked delightful.
It was just like Imamura looked like unsure and confused and was just like sitting in the corner while a line of nerds waited for him to draw yeah. them pictures.
Yeah,
it was adorable.
I think Imamura, like, he does seem to be enjoying his retired life.
He's like writing comics, and I think he's
I think he helped out with a game that's coming. I think it's announced for Switch, but it got a release date on Steam, Grappin, which is like okay. I believe it's some kind of like you know, like climbing platformer or something like that. It's on my Steam wish list because it came up, and I think Imamura is somehow involved with it. So I was immediately curious. It's coming out at the end yep. of March.
Yeah, I'll try any weird post Nintendo stuff Imamura wants to work on.
Yeah. I mean, even if it's just like he's like, I made a character. I'm like, all right, sir, you made F-Zero and Star Fox characters. I'm on board.
Yep.
I'd play his next thing.
Yeah, we can move on to the next question. Even though I think we might have touched on this question a little bit.
I think we did.
But Cherry Goblin says, hey, Connectivity, a couple episodes ago, you were discussing how you shouldn't stress out about spending money in the Wii U and 3DS eShops. I'm glad you gave that advice because we now have Game Boy and Game Boy Advance on NSO. However, there's still some stuff left on the old eShops. DS and Wii games are still on Wii U Virtual Console, while Game Gear is still on 3DS Virtual Console. And of course, there are the various 3DS eShop exclusives, such as the Guild Games and Rusty's Real Deal Baseball. What are the chances of any of this content making it onto Nintendo Switch Online or Switch in general? Any recommendations? Thanks, and keep up the good work.
I don't think Rusty's Real Deal Baseball is going to make it. Yeah,
Rusty's Real Deal Baseball is never coming off of 3DS.
Yep. And, like, is that a bad thing? Maybe not.
It's from historical purposes, yes, but like it's cute.
I did check this morning because somebody else asked me about it. It is compatible with Citra, so rest assured that Rusty's Real Deal Baseball is preserved for all eternity.
That's more curiosity than an actual game I'd recommend.
Yeah.
Also, so
yeah, the Guild Games. I really wonder if they're going to be trapped on 3DS. TBD, and I know that doesn't help you if you're like I should go buy Aeroporter right now. Which, if you remembered Aeroporter and didn't buy it, maybe just go buy it. Like, why not? Get Crimson Shroud. That game rules.
Oh, I forgot about that game. That was a neat game.
I think that was a Guild game. I'm pretty sure. But Crimson Shroud Matsuno? Is that the dude who did Final Fantasy Tactics? Crimson Shroud is real good. That's all I got on that. But the Guild Games, let's see what level 5 does with this like Leighton revival and all that jazz. because I think if they actually do have some kind of renaissance, then I wouldn't be surprised if those guild games show up on PC or Switch or something in the future. Honestly, if we're looking at it from a preservation angle, let's hope those guild games wind up on Steam. Because
yeah.
Fool me once, fool me twice, fool me three times, and I'll still be here, Nintendo. But also, like, this is eventually going to shut down. But you had a waking dream news blast,
right, John? Oh, yeah. So I should mention this because I said in a couple previous episodes that we didn't have a way to emulate DSiWare yet. And for some of those episodes, it was probably true. But apparently a couple months ago, like, got that problem solved. And DSiWare is fully emulatable. And I went to sleep that night and had a lot of dreams. And it seems to work real well. And I'm just going to say that, like, dreaming of Xscape, I don't even have to say I'm dreaming of that because I own that game. I can just say, because it's legal, that, yeah, Xscape on your PC is great. Though, because of the way they do the color grading in that game, you cannot run it in higher resolutions than its original resolution. Because I found out that to make the different worlds the different colors, it's all the same assets, and then there's just like a color grading on top of the screen, like a post-process effect that changes all the colors. But that effect isn't tied to the like native res. It just is hard-coded at like whatever the like 190p or whatever the DS resolution is. So you're stuck at the original resolution, but it still plays great. That game has controller settings, so you don't have to do the touchscreen. So you can play it on an Xbox controller, and it's awesome. But yeah, so that even less reason to worry too much about buying every single game off the eShop.
And I do like there's a good assortment of DS and Wii games that are on the Wii U Virtual Console. With that, like, I do think if it's like a Mario game, it's going to show up at some point. You might have to wait a while. Like, I mean, Super Mario Sunshine was not available outside of GameCube. GameCube disc until, you know, 2020, and even that was only for like 9 months. And also a lot of the DS games that even made it to Wii U, like, it is Mario and Zelda, Star Fox Command, and I would also argue that some of those games are kind of maybe not the most playable on
it
Wii
really
U.
Depends. There are some that are though, great, and some like Star Fox Command I think is fantastic on Wii U.
Oh god, it just dawned on me. We're going to be in a world where you can't buy a Picross 3D game.
Oh, no.
No.
Are you going to be okay? Do you need to retire?
Shit. I mean, there is that like janky Picross Voxelgram that's on Switch, which is, you know, it's fine. It's not the Nintendo Picross 3D. But Picross 3D is a Wii U virtual console game. Plays pretty well on the Wii U, as long as you're using the touchscreen. I don't think you can play it without the touchscreen. But honestly, like, and I, you know, wait until after you can't buy it legally. But a thing that I learned when I found out about this is I took one of my old 3DSs and I hacked the shit out of it. And I, humorously, I haven't actually done anything with it as far as like putting games on it, but like it's there. For when I have this issue where it's like, something happened to my legal 3DS. I'm just going to go and find this Picross 3D Round 2 ROM and put it on my hacked one and have a waking dream or whatever. Like, if you can't buy it legally, if there is not an actual way to get the thing, like, all these systems are playable in some capacity.
Yeah, and especially, like, you know, once you get into 3DS, you need a decent computer to run it. But, like, original, like, DS and DSiWare, like, your toaster can run that. Your Xbox Series X will run it great. I wonder if a hacked Switch can run DS stuff okay. Your Steam Deck definitely can. Like, you probably have an option in your house for playing these games.
And even with Wii, I've not dabbled too far in it, but I believe you can, without that much fudgery, I believe you can like connect your Wii remote and actually use that with emulator.
Oh, to a computer? Yeah, because it's just a Bluetooth controller.
Yeah, it's just Bluetooth, isn't it?
Yep. You have to download like a third party app, but
you know what? There's some finagling with playing Wii games. Like, playing them on a Wii or Wii U.
Yeah, it's arguably no harder to set up your computer to play Wii games than it is to plug in your Wii U.
I mean, my thing with this, especially as we're a month away, is like, if there is something that you've been like, you know, I've been wanting to buy the final Dylan's Rolling Western game. Yeah, maybe just buy it. If you've been thinking about it and you just never got around to it. But if you're, you know, thinking about becoming a pack rat and spending like $200 on the 3DS eShop before it closes next month, like, maybe slow down. There will be ways to play these games.
Yeah, and let me be a cautionary tale, because I, when Atlas did their big sale, I bought all the Persona Q games, all the SMT games, and notably all the Etrian Odyssey games. And now we have the first trilogy going to be re-released on Switch. This,
you did not buy any of the games that are coming out on Switch in June.
I guess, yeah, because the Untold ones are like slightly different from the original DS games.
That's what I forget who I had a back and forth with, where they're like, well, you could just buy these games on 3DS. I'm like, you can't. Like, they never made Untold 3. I was hoping they would, because that's the one. I never actually played any of the Etrian Odyssey DS games. My entry point was 4 on 3DS. And then I played all the releases after that. So I'm really looking forward to those coming to Switch. But I mean, my hope is that Switch 2 is just like they make another DS.
Yeah. Another dual screen. Because
that would solve a lot of these issues.
Yeah. I mean, maybe take a look at like Radiant Historia, which has a demo. That'd be a cool game. I'm not sure if that'll be ported over somewhere. But
yeah, and there's a, you know, hard copy of that. There's a DS version and a 3DS version, but it is an Atlas game, so it's probably a high price to buy either physical version.
Oh, I've looked at physical. It's pretty expensive.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, once again, like, I mean, Atlas is bringing Etrian Odyssey games, a series that people feared might have been locked to two-screen games or two-screen systems that don't exist anymore. Like, if there's enough demand for something, I feel like Atlas, like, I think the Persona Q games have a future.
Yeah.
Like, it's Persona, baby. Radiant Historia is definitely like a game that, like, will that ever come back? I don't know, but like, probably. If there's money, it'll happen.
I'm honestly kind of surprised that after Persona 5, they didn't just like go back and dig up every old Persona game, because like they went back to like the PSP, like the ones they just put out. Shin Megami
Tensei.
3, 4,
and 5 are kind of the three that people. Well, I mean, I guess there's a lot of stuff that like people don't like.
There's, 3 the first anymore. One's on like PS1, right? First Persona.
Yes, I forget a lot of it, but like. The first two Persona games are not held in the same high regard as 3, 4, 5 are.
People who started with Persona 5 don't know that. You just go, hey, here's more of that game.
I do think, like, I wouldn't be shocked if they wind up showing up in some kind of collection. But, like, 3, 4, 5, that's where the money's at.
Yeah.
I do wonder, like, SMT4, like, I really like that. I think it's better than 5. And I think 5 is pretty good. I hope that those come back in some capacity.
Yeah, there were multiple SMTs on the 3DS and DS, well, right?
So there was 4 and 4 Apocalypse. You had Devil Survivor 1 and, or no, what the hell is
it? Devil Survivor, Overclocked.
Yes, yeah, Overclocked, and then the sequel to that. You know, Devil Survivor 2, you had like the remaster of Soul Hackers. Which is pretty good. And then that sequel came out on Xbox and PlayStation last year.
Just got hit Game Pass recently. Yeah.
I'll probably check it out. I heard it was okay. That was one of those games that I was like, oh, cool, it's coming out. And then it came out and I didn't hear anyone talk about it.
I think it got pretty middling reviews.
Yeah.
The only thing I know about it is that people consider it to be like the worst dungeons in any of the Atlas RPGs.
Yeah, that makes sense. there's a couple publishers that when the 3DS eShop goes, like, I mean, really, I mean, Nintendo, of course, but then like Sega and Atlas, they were the people supporting 3DS until the bitter end. Because everybody else, their games got pirated and then they stopped putting games out on them. And
that'll
the only reason why Atlas stuck around was because they had enough of a fan base that even if their games got pirated weeks before they came out, they'd still survive.
Yeah.
So if I had one final lesson to impart as we get down to the end of these questions about what to do with these e-shops closing down, is do what you got to do when these things aren't accessible. When they're accessible, like, for the love of God, just spend some fucking money. Like,
well, and
support
it is,
things that you like.
Right. And this is, I don't want this to come off as like harsh, but like, it's too late. Like, if you wanted to like do it to like the time to buy, especially if these, like, if you're looking at like indie games, like the time to buy those was when they were coming out. But like now, like half of those developers aren't making games anymore. Like,
yeah,
like it's too late, man. You missed the bus. Go spend your money on Switch games where those developers are still like actively doing stuff.
Yeah, it's, you know, although wasn't it Gunman Clive and Onion Assault developer Bertel Horberg, who is a wonderful,
we're gonna bring him up every episode because we love
probably
him. We should get him on sometime.
We should
be fun.
But he, I think he made a comment that like he still gets money for Gunman Clive on 3DS.
Yeah, he's made some comments that like the 3DS shop shutting down is going to be a problem for his sales, because that was still his like best selling platform for those.
Yeah.
But like, you want to buy Gunman Clive? It's really good on the Switch. You can get both of them in HD. They're incredible. I did enjoy his recent thing of like he tweeted out Mech's Termination Force, and then everyone was like, wow, that game looks really cool. And it had like its best sales day since launch. And he made the comment like, oh, is this what I have to do? And I'm like, yeah, man, you got to like market your games. Like, I don't, like, I know you've like, Extermination Force is a bad example because like you did market that one and it didn't do great. But like, nobody heard of Onion Assault before you made it, except for people who are like weirdly aggressive fans of you, like me, who were like waiting for Bertel to make a new game. Like, you got to tell people you're making a game, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like, I get it, like money's tough sometimes, but instead of throwing a lot of money at a store that's gonna die real soon, you know, support developers in the here and now.
Go buy Rebel Galaxy Outlaw on Switch. It's great.
I probably just should. I've been waiting for a sale literally since it came out, and it has been, what, 3 years?
Yep. Never going on sale. Also, I'm pretty sure the developers kind of gave up on that game after it came out, because everybody got real mad at them that it wasn't a strategy game, because it was a sequel to a strategy game. But it's incredible.
Yeah,
go play
it. Maybe I should. Well, no, what I'll do is I'll buy it on Switch, and the next day they'll be like, we're putting it on sale.
Yeah. Yep. That's fine. Be the sacrifice.
Although, no, I think they have a thing. Did you guys have like just a bunch of gold coins show up in your Switch account?
I didn't look. Was that a thing that might happen?
I have like $25 in gold coins.
Why?
Wait. Do I need to check something now?
I think it was some kind of deal if you're like an expansion pack subscriber. I think you got like double points or something, and it like all paid out. Oh, interesting. Recently. But like I did like, I saw someone mention that, and when I was checking the eShop the other day, I looked in, I'm like, okay, yeah, I do have $25 in gold coins.
Weird.
So maybe I'll buy Rebel Galaxy Outlaw. Put my money where my mouth is, or my gold coins where my mouth is. I might.
It's also on Steam.
Oh, and I'm sure it's better everywhere else.
Well, no. I think it's on Steam.
It's on Steam now. It originally was Epic Game Store exclusive on PC, but it's on Steam now, I think.
But I think with Steam, it does not work on Steam Deck. I think I looked
so
into
Switch
that.
Is still the best way to play it portably. The cool thing with the PC version is that it has a ship painting feature where you can like completely custom paint job all of your ships, which is not in the console versions.
You can also put it in your own music, which is pretty cool.
That is, though, the existing soundtrack is all licensed music and it's really good.
Maybe I'll just use those gold coins to buy Rebel Galaxy Outlaw.
Do you guys want to have a Rebel Galaxy Outlaw game club?
Jesus Christ, no.
How long is that game?
It's kind of long. But like, I feel like you can, it's one of those games where like, there's a lot of content, but you can play it for a while and understand what it is. And if it's like, it's not something where it's like, oh, you have to play for 30 hours before it gets good. Like, no, you pretty much get what it is within the first hour. And then if you want to keep doing that, like, go for it.
So on this sleepy listener mail episode of Connectivity, I'm gonna put out an idea. We don't need to commit to it. We don't need to do an April Fool's joke about it when we don't follow through. What if we
Alex.
Like
what if a we, month
like,
away
picked, like a Switch indie game that is not brand new, like I mean if it's something like the first one could be John bringing forth Rebel Galaxy Outlaw, and maybe not a game club, but like we do like all play it and then talk about it. Like maybe I'll just be like what's one from what Tumbleseed rules. I love that game. It's on Switch. But as we talk about it, I mean, we're going to lose this talking point of talking about the Wii U and 3DS eShop, them closing. So let's get ahead of the curve and start talking about Switch games from indie developers that you don't want to miss out on.
Yeah, I like this. Well, that would be like you could do one where like either we could both talk about Rebel Galaxy Outlaw, or yeah, like you could do that and then you could give me something I have to play.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Did you play Temple Seed?
I don't think so.
It's pretty good. Or Battle Chef Brigade. I'm just trying to think of like first
that one
year
did look
Switch
good.
Indie games.
I played some Fast Racing
Remix.
RMX.
Yeah. That game's awesome.
Yeah, the Smash Pieces crew was playing through F-Zero, and I was like, I'd boot up F-Zero. I was like, I already have Fast RMX on here. Might as well just play that, and it's really good.
Had you not played it before?
The first year of Switch, I played maybe like 2 or 3 hours of it.
Sure. Yeah, it was a launch day game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then yep. I came back to it for the first time in a long time, and it hits the spot when you're looking
it's
for an
real
F-Zero.
Good. Yeah, rides the line between F-Zero and Wipeout pretty well. And I think does a good job of pleasing both audiences. I think they even got the narrator from F-Zero to scream boost power
at you. I
believe
so. Yeah. But yeah, let's do that. We can come up with details.
We can make like a Google Doc where... Yeah, we could make a Google... Okay, here's what we do. Here's what we do. We're planning this live on the air. We make a Google Doc where everyone who is participating, even if it's just like the three of us, lists out a bunch of games, and then each person can just pick a game from any list that isn't their own. And that way you aren't forced to spend like a ton of money. You can buy a cheap one if you want.
Cool.
And then we just get together and talk about them. We could even throw it out to patrons to like submit their own suggestions, and we could do ones where we use their list.
Yeah, listeners, send in old Switch games you want us to talk about.
Have either of you played Hollow Knight? It's this really hidden gem.
Yeah,
I've never heard of it.
We'll be playing Hollow Knight and Golf Story, two Switch games you've definitely never played.
If you like Metroid Prime, consider Hollow Knight.
Yeah.
I did. I saw this thing where apparently people thought that Axiom Verge ripped off Bioshock Infinite.
Whoa.
And then also that Hollow Knight ripped off Dark Souls.
Well, okay. You know what? At least with the second one, I understand. What about Axiom Verge was even like Bioshock Infinite?
It is apparently like plot themes, which like...
Of what? I've played both those games. I can't figure...
It would get into spoilers for both games.
Okay.
But I'll tell you offline about like where it came from. It's on also if you go to Tom Happ's Twitter. That's where I'd come across it, that like he replied to somebody and quote tweeted it being like, I like played Bioshock Infinite and then someone said that I ripped it off and I was like, no, I didn't.
Weird.
But it's also, yeah, apparently with Hollow Knight, and this is somebody tweeted this, so I didn't really don't know the veracity of this, that apparently people were like, you ripped off Dark Souls, and they're like, we had heard about the game a little bit, but we'd never played it before.
That one, at least they're the same genre, kind of. Like Hollow Knight is a 2D Souls-like. Yeah, all right.
Anyway, yeah, let's do this. And yeah, like this while idea. We think about games to add to that list, let's go to the last piece of listener mail. Vincent says, hey, gents, with the best Nintendo-published GameCube game of 2002 coming to Switch, Metroid Prime, That's some Mario Sunshine slander if I ever... No, Metroid Prime's way better. That's some Eternal Darkness slitting in. No, Metroid Prime is way better. That's some Sega Soccer Slam slander. That wasn't published by Nintendo. What other Nintendo-published GameCube games do you think should come to Switch? The rules are you're only allowed to pick one Nintendo-published GameCube game from each year. So for 2002, it's Metroid Prime. Star Fox Adventures is out. What would you pick for 2001, 2003, 2004, 2005, and 2006? Is this just a question designed to create a stealth cube fight episode? Maybe. Thanks, y'all. Keep up the good work. For 2004 and 2006, Byte and Kaidos 1 and 2, and it's already done.
Well, I think that means it doesn't count, right?
Yeah.
Or does that mean we don't get to pick from those years? Or can we pick literally anything else?
I'm now just looking up a list of Nintendo-published GameCube games.
I'm looking at a list of just all of the GameCube games, and it's hilariously short. 2001, got to work our way through the years. 2001, I'd probably say Wave Race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I can hear the argument for Melee, but, like, that fan base is annoying.
Yeah, I don't want... That's, like, I'm not going to pick Melee, and I'm not going to pick Paper Mario Thousand Year Door. Sorry.
Although, you know what, I'm not going to commit to that, but yeah.
There's also Star Wars Rogue Squadron 2 Rogue Leader.
Is that Nintendo 2001?
I don't believe
that's Nintendo. I missed that part of the email. Does it have to be Nintendo published? Oh, okay, yeah, then Wave Race, easy.
Yeah, Wave Race. There's only four choices, and it's the only one of those four choices that doesn't already have representation on Switch. We've got Luigi's Mansion 3, we've got Pikmin 3 and soon 4, and we got Smash Ultimate.
Yeah. I guess Animal Crossing, we could...
That's if we count the Japanese release date.
Oh, geez, that is the N60... Oh, wow, okay. Yeah, never mind.
2003, I mean, F-Zero GX?
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Hang on. 2002 is a solid year for releases. I'm scrolling down here. There we go.
Well, we already have Metroid Prime for it, yeah. So.
2003, yeah, I feel like GX is probably the pick. Shout out to Kirby Air Ride and 1080 Avalanche.
Actually, shout outs to Mario Golf Toadstool Tour.
Best console Mario Golf.
How about a curveball and we do Legend of Zelda Collector's Edition? We could imagine emulating the GameCube emulation of N64 games.
And Wind Waker is also, that.
Oh, that doesn't count.
Does that count? Because I would want a Wii U port. I don't want the GameCube game.
I didn't realize that Nintendo published Crystal Chronicles.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, because that was the stuff where, like, Square Enix didn't technically make that game. Because I believe there was some kind of legal stuff with how they were exclusive to Sony platforms at the time.
Isn't there like a weird fund for it?
Yeah. Yeah, because the developer is the Game Designers Studio. I believe I've written about this in some form.
I don't read anything you write. More of a VGC guy myself.
Ooh, actually, Mario Party 5. That's a very good Mario Party.
No.
Let me just give me the boards and the mechanics from Mario Party.
I love
Party
the
5.
Idea of just like a really, really high quality remake of just an arbitrary Mario Party game in the middle of the series.
It's not even like Mario Party Superstars. It's just,
no, just, it's just Mario Party 5. Mario Party 5 remastered by Retro Studios with the support of Iron Galaxy. Custom Robo Bitch. or Four Swords Adventures.
Four Swords Adventures. Absolutely, yes.
Oh, well, okay, are we ruling out Metroid Prime? Because I want Metroid Prime 2 Echoes, but let's rule out Metroid Prime in its entirety, just to make this easier.
2005 is hard.
2005 is Star Fox Assault.
No, I mean, I think the pick is Star Fox Assault, but like, although I have to say...
Or Mario Party 7.
After playing Donkey Kong Jungle Beat on Wii, maybe that's a game that has to just die with the bongos.
Because you could tap on the touchscreen of the Switch.
I think the pick in 05 is Assault, but Fire Emblem Path of Radiance.
Yeah.
That would be pretty cool. And hey, Super Mario Strikers would be better than the Mario Strikers game that we got on Switch.
It'd be really interesting to see how the GameCube Fire Emblem stuff would do on a modern system. Like, because that's right in the peak of nobody buying those games.
Yep. Yeah. And also it features a very popular character in the fan base,
right?
And,
is that Roy?
No,
in
Ike.
Path of Radio. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think it's very possible that those games get remade, both that and the Wii game.
Oh, there is Dance Dance Revolution Mario Mix, though.
That is legitimately very good.
It's so weird.
Chibi Robo for 2006. I don't even think there's a debate.
We could always take another stab at Twilight Princess.
Or Odama. And then the list that I'm looking at has a bunch of third-party or unreleased games, or at least as in like third-party published in North America. Doshin the Giant.
For the second time this episode.
Got to keep on mentioning Doshin the Giant. Giftpia, which is a bizarro skip game that predated Captain Rainbow and Chibi Robo. But the one that I would love to see come back is a game that I actually played a lot of, and that is Cubivore, which was published by Nintendo in Japan, and then Atlas brought it over. It's, I forget what the developer, but Intelligent Systems worked on that game.
Such a weird game.
The company that made it was, looking at it, it was basically, I think it was a Nintendo-funded thing that, or at least Nintendo 40% owned 40% of this company. And it was basically a company created to make more games for Nintendo systems because the third-party support was bad.
Yeah.
But they really only made Cubivore. Seems like a bad deal. But Cubivore itself is a bizarro game that one of my wife's friends had it. So when I started dating her in college, we hung out with her friend and she had a GameCube, and I was like, what games do you have? And then I wound up borrowing Cubivore from her for 2 years and played a shitload of Cubivore and gave it back to her. And then asked her a couple years later, being like, do you still have that copy of Cubivore? I would buy it from you for what it's worth, which I think at the time was damn near $100. And she said that she gave them away to somebody else a year or two before, and I'm still upset about it.
Are you aware of how much Cubivore is worth now?
It is even more. It is worth even more money.
A complete in-box copy is averaging $560. Just the disc by itself sitting on your garage floor is worth $300.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, recall. I mean, this probably would have been 2016, maybe, when I think it was before the Switch came out, that I asked her about it. And yeah, I don't know if she gave it away or sold it to somebody for a song, but I know I was just that I will literally give you $100 for this game, because I believe that's what the street value of it was then. But Jesus.
Yep.
So let's go, Nintendo, bring back Cubivore. Hot Switch people remake. Demand it.
Yeah, if we branch outside of Nintendo, then I think there's a lot more of these that I want. But the later years they really dry up.
I mean, for me, it would 2001 would be Tony Hawk 3, 2002 would be Tony Hawk 4, 2003 would be Tony Hawk's Underground, but not Thug 2.
You know, I would also take, and I'm still amazed that this hasn't happened, how have the Sonic Adventure games not been? Given that they're the ones that everybody is make more games like this.
Yeah.
They've been ported poorly a couple times, but they've never they've done Colors, but they haven't done
Sonic
Adventure 1 and 2. It's so weird to me when those are the most popular ones, it would seem.
Well, every time that they port Sonic Adventure, it gets worse.
Well, they'd have to remake it. I mean, I guess Sonic Colors also got worse when they did a remaster. So that might just have to be a given. Sonic is like a vinyl record. Every time you play it, it degrades in quality a little bit. So you gotta transfer it over to a digital medium now before it gets any worse. I think that's so they have to start fresh now from where they are. Honestly, even if they just did an accurate Dreamcast port of those games as opposed to the GameCube versions, that would help, especially with the first Sonic Adventure, which is still janky on the GameCube, but looks significantly better. Or still janky on the Dreamcast, sorry. I'd also like the other Pac-Man World games.
One was totally fine. I don't think it was great, mm-hmm. but I had fun playing it. Kid had fun playing it.
Yeah, and that's the worst one. That's the thing, is they started with the worst game in the series, but did a decent remaster. Apparently, I was the only one who thought so, though, because I'm the only person in their accolades trailer.
Yeah, the accolade trailer.
It's the singular accolade.
Just thinking about GameCube remasters, I know there's concerns about the Button Kaidos 1 and 2 remaster, especially after Bandai Namco put out that god-awful Tales of Symphonia port.
Which they did apologize for. Did you see that?
Yeah. Way to go, Matt. I'm guilting them. Like, I really hope the Button Kaidos remaster is fine. I've never played the second one. And the first one's like, really, it is funny that people are like begging for this. And it's like, you do realize this is like a wackadoo card battling game, right?
Like, right. Well, nobody's ever played it. That's weird. The fun thing. Yeah.
Happy to see it come to modern consoles. Like, well, we'll support it unless it's trash. But looking forward to that. And I hope they turn out fine. I guess it's pretty much near the end of the show. Check out my Octopath Traveler 2 review. And then if you want to see people that love it, I don't know, look everywhere else on the internet. It's what annoys me about the reception of Octopath Traveler 2 is that I liked the game.
Yes.
I enjoyed it. I had a good time of it. I put like 50 to 60 hours into the game in like a less than 2 week span. And it only near the very end where the game wound up being longer than I expected it to be. Did it really become a grind? That was just because I did have a deadline for you know, hit embargo. Like, it's a really good RPG. I think it is a marked improvement from the first one, even if I gave the first one a higher score. But it is, like, I don't I've seen people calling it like it's the best JRPG in the past 20 years, which, I mean, that's Xenoblade Chronicles 3. I've said that many times here. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Having gone from playing Octopath Traveler 2 to playing more Xenoblade Chronicles 3, Xenoblade Chronicles 3 is way better. But yeah, Octopath Traveler 2 is pretty good. Check out the prologue demo if you're on the fence, because I think that'll do a good job of basically, like, you know, like, if you played the first one and enjoyed it, you will likely enjoy this one. If you were on the fence about the first one, play through the demo, because I have a feeling by the time you get to the end of that, if you are hankering for more, go get the full game.
Yeah, it's always frustrating, like, when your complaints are about kind of the late game stuff. I always wonder, like, when I don't see it reflected in other reviews, like, am I just crazy, or did half of these reviewers just not actually make it to the end of the game?
It is kind of frustrating seeing people being like, I've spent 10 hours with the game and all these reviewers are high on crack, because if I reviewed the game after 10 hours, I would have been way higher on it.
Right. Like,
to try to say without being too spoilery is that there's a lot of things that the game makes you think it's going to do. Like there's a concept introduced pretty early on where it's like, for some of the stories, like the first chapter will happen and it'll be like, I have to go to these three places. And you think that it might be like, oh, I could basically pick like one place to go to further the story. No, like, you just have three chapter twos to do for someone. Like,
yeah.
So it's not necessarily branching paths so much as that they're making the chapters longer and more involved, which does make it so that way there's more variety for what you're doing. I still love how Oswald the Scholar starts off trapped in prison. And whereas most people, like, the kind of the format is that, like, character in town has their first chapter and then they join your party. For Oswald, his first chapter is he's in prison. His second chapter is he is breaking out of prison. And like stuff like that does, it makes it more interesting to go through these stories because it's not the same setup for every single one. But I also think that they basically like put a new hat on
right.
Something that is pretty close to the previous game's like structure, which works. It does make it a better game. Some of the like it's they still don't really do a good job of connecting all the characters together. It is a better attempt. It happens in like the final hours of the game. And I've realized there is a lot of lore in Octopath, in the world of Octopath, and I am not really that into all of the lore, but there is certainly a lot of lore in that game.
Yeah, and if it doesn't connect with you, then
yeah,
I don't know.
The new Kirby game is fantastic, though.
It's an old Kirby game, Neil.
Yeah, well, I haven't gotten. I'm getting close to. I've been playing it with my kid. So we'll probably have a unique-ish review. Because it's going to be...
Well, especially, like does he know how to spell yet?
No.
Okay, yeah, that's going to make it very unique. He'll
probably just draw a map.
Editing will be difficult.
Gibberish. but I am going to try to work into a little bit about like this is my thoughts on it. Also, like, experiences that my 4-year-old had, because I feel like that is relevant for a Kirby game. But it is very good. I think the way that this game handles co-op play, in the fact that everything in the game is you can do with 4 players outside of the challenge rooms, but it's just so easy to go in and out of co-op in a way that I feel like Star Allies was a little bit more thorny about, and Forgotten Land, even if that is definitely the best Kirby game maybe ever made, Forgotten Land only had 2-player co-op, so it's just not quite the same as, like, oh, I'm sitting down and I'm just going to hop in, you know, my wife and I can play Kirby with my kid for a little bit, and then hop out whenever we want to. But, like, that main game, it's just a really good 2D Kirby game. It's not doing anything more, not doing anything less. And getting to the point where I'm going to check out that Magalore epilogue that is the new content added. Real curious to see how that comes out.
Can you access that from the beginning, or do you have to have finished
you
the game first?
You have to roll credits.
Okay.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it's not like... I'll be real. Like, if I powered through it, like, it would have been very easy to roll credits very quickly. But I'm playing this game with a 4-year-old. So we're like world 4.
Sure.
But
it also has a demo. Yeah. It's a pretty good demo.
It does have a demo.
Oh, yeah, does it?
Try the demo. Okay.
Yeah.
If you like the demo, nothing carries over. But
there's a demo. I played the first like hour of Atomic Heart because it's on Game Pass. Sold a little of my data to the Russians just for fun. And I don't think I'll be playing more than that hour of Atomic Heart. That game wants to be BioShock, but is bad at it. Also, hilariously, like, it's all of the characters are Russian, but almost all of them have accents that aren't Russian. Like, they all have different accents, but, like, I've met, like, one dude that has a Russian accent. I met, like, a very British lady earlier who was, like, written as a very British lady. And it was deeply confused. The main character is super American. It's very, it's very strange. That game's a little not great. But maybe that's for the best. That game is lucky it came out around the same time as Harry Potter, or people would have been giving it way more crap. But lucky for it, they were all distracted.
Yep. Yeah, Theater Rhythm, Final Bar Line, rocks. Like, good lord. It's just very good at what it does. And I bought the Ridiculous version with all the DLC. So I think every few weeks, I'm going to get a bunch of Square Enix music to play on Theater Rhythm.
Good.
And Xenoblade Chronicles 3 to round out some of the stuff that I've been playing over like the past month. The Xenoblade Chronicles 3, I am getting ever precariously close to actually finishing the game. To give you guys, I'm in Noah's side story, which I'm not sure exactly how close that is to the end, but I believe it's pretty close.
Is it a required side story? Yes. Or is it? Okay, oh, I'm trying to remember. Information is starting to be lost to me.
Okay.
I want to say something, but I don't want to spoil either Neil or the audience.
Yeah. No, we can talk a little bit after we finish recording, because I don't mind being that spoiled. What else was I going to say? Oh, the DLC. The roguelike DLC is actually kind of neat.
It's good. It's really hard.
Yeah.
I played the second round on easy mode and was limping through the final boss. I'm terrified to try anything on hard, and I like to think that I'm not terrible at Xenoblade, but like, holy crap, that mode is
what
difficult.
I like about it is because I do feel like I don't even think I'm that overleveled in the main game, but I'm definitely a little overleveled. Mm-hmm. But what I like about the DLC is that it really does just challenge you to actually know how to strategize in this combat,
right? Because it controls your level, so like, you cannot be overleveled.
Like, it's very deliberate, and it's like, no, you need to actually know how to do this stuff effectively.
Yeah.
It matters what character you pick to be, what class they are. It matters what characters you support yourself with. Like, I realized I had one of my runs, and I've only done 2 runs. One of them, I just didn't really have the opportunity to get a lot of healers. So, like, a couple of people fainted. I'm like, well, I'm screwed.
It keeps giving me the only healer it keeps offering me is Miyabi, who's a terrible healer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, give me like Teach or like what's the kid? I don't remember his name. But like really just anybody except Miyabi would be super rad to have in my party for healers. Yeah,
because I don't really like, and I don't want my, I mean, maybe there's actually a strategy in having your main character be a healer.
That's what I've been starting to think. Yeah.
Yeah.
The early rounds might be slightly more difficult, but it would probably pay off in the long run.
And I mean, there are some of the healers that are a little bit more offensive as well.
Yeah.
But then you can actually revive people. And I know that's something that I've done sometimes in the main game where I wind up just controlling the healer during a boss that just like kicks the shit out of people and just like dart around and heal people.
Yeah, I'll be in charge of just keeping the party alive while you guys fight him.
But what a video game. Like
it sure is a game.
I am continually floored at how much I enjoy that game and how I've relished being able to just slowly play it over the course of what, eight months now? And it like has not lost its shine.
Yeah. Have you gotten the new DLC character unlocked yet?
Yes.
Okay, I haven't gone and gotten her yet. I found a spot on the map that I had not been to while playing that roguelite stuff, which was amazing because it wasn't just like, oh, I found a secret area. It was like a whole chunk of the map in the, not the first area, but the second zone where you go through like the desert and then kind of into the grasslands.
I do recall with that spot is that like when you go through it initially, it's basically just like, don't go over here.
Well, and what it was, what I realized it was, is there was this spot on the map where there was a gap between where I had explored as if I had like skipped over it somehow magically. And I was like, how did I do that? And then I got there and realized that it was a cutscene trigger and that there's a cutscene that triggers and then it ends and you're farther along in the map. And I had never gone back to that area. And then I went back there and there was like a huge area I had never been to that led off into a side area that led me into a loading zone into another map, into an area that was inaccessible in that map unless I entered it from that way. And I was like, wait,
I think I know the spot that you're talking about, because I think that I was like, the map is not filled in, I must go back.
Yeah. Yeah, I was amazed by like how much like brand new things I was seeing a year later. But yeah, it's a game that keeps on giving.
Yep. Alex, have you been playing anything?
I've been playing a whole lot of Breath of the Wild, I'll tell you that.
What's that?
Very topical. You're working ahead in the game club, and I think it's cheating.
Well, I've already played Skyward Sword. We've been over this.
So
you played Breath of the Wild.
Are you guys going to replay Skyward Sword again?
No.
Okay. You're just going to hold off on playing Breath of the Wild for. Well,
I have a partial save file on my OLED that I might pick up.
Well, I mean, for me, it was we finished Twilight Princess, and then I like almost literally got the Octopath code. And then I was playing, I got the Octopath code, and then the Direct happened, and there was like Metroid Prime and all that stuff that came out.
Yeah.
And I was like, I have to keep playing Octopath, and I cannot play these other games. I'll get there soon. There's not as much coming out in March that I want to play.
What happened to me is that I kind of accidentally started a full playthrough. I was testing out Waking Dreams.
Yes.
As you do.
And one stuck on for a little too long, and next thing I know, I'm outside the Great Plateau heading towards Kakariko, and then it turned to its own playthrough. But the intention was just to see how to put it together and tweak some things. But yeah, now I'm playing it for real.
I am hearing you mentioned it earlier about how you're playing it in the Discord, which join the fun, talk about the 3D Zelda game club in our Discord. The link is on the website somewhere. I don't know, tweet at us. But the Breath of the Wild, I was thinking about when I do this replay, like what's my game plan? And I purposefully, whenever I've replayed it since the first time I played it, I basically never further the plot. So I'm thinking now I might actually go to Kakariko first, because the couple other times that I've never gotten that deep into a playthrough. I think the most I've gotten is like two divine beasts and like, you know, like 40 shrines or something. But instead of like picking an opposite direction to go, I might just go to Kakariko, because I haven't done that since 2017. I usually I know I like getting the Rito power up just because it helps with exploration. Mm-hmm. I usually go there first, or other times I've gone like to the northwest or the south, just because like the Zora area is kind of where it funnels you first.
That feels that feels like what it wants to have be the first dungeon,
because it sends you to Kakariko and you're like, where's the closest divine beast? And you're like, oh, it's right there.
Yep. Yeah, there's like a road directly to it.
It's, and well, oh man,
so you can go anywhere, but like it's optimal to go towards Kakariko, because then you can get like unlock the stuff for memories, get upgrades for your Sheikah slate if you go to Hateno, get the champion's shirt, get to the first great fairy, go get some upgrades from Hestu. Like there's all these little things that like, sure, you could go in the opposite direction, but all the stuff is really great early game. So I ended up going straight back to Kakariko and then through Zora. Yeah,
I think that's what I'm going to wind up doing for my for my replay before Tears of the Kingdom.
I've also been playing Professor Layton in the Curious Village.
Oh, so hell yeah.
My friend. First time? No, I played this way back in the day, but it's my first time in a long time, like over a decade. My friend Odacat, he's a streamer, so go look him up on Odacat TV, and I join him every now and then to play Professor Layton. We did our first stream, we're doing Curious Village, and I also bought for myself the iOS ports. And wow, that game, at least that first game, really holds up. The atmosphere is incredible. The puzzles are fun. Those characters are really likable and charming to be around. It's such a good time.
My memory of trying to replay the first game, and this was a while ago, is that the puzzle variety sucks.
It's some of the puzzles are bad.
That is it. Like I feel like in 2 and 3 is when it starts being like, oh, this is really good. And then the puzzle master died and Lady Layton was bad. I've heard good things about the mobile ports as well. I was going to play Curious Village and then somebody cautioned me to maybe hold off and like play around with it on DS before committing to buying the mobile version. And I did. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Now I definitely see that the puzzles maybe are a little bit one note in the first one.
Yeah, and I'm sticking around mostly for the vibes. Some of the puzzles are really great. I really like the wolf and chick puzzle where you kind of cross them over
those are always fun.
The river. There's some interesting logic puzzles. The match puzzles I think are kind of lame, but for the most part they're okay. I definitely felt like in the second and third one they hit their stride a little bit better, and some of that is like the way you interact with the puzzles get better. Unwound Future, I think, is probably the pinnacle of Layton.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, Unwound Future was also a game that I finished while I was on a plane. And I had to explain to my brother why I was, like, in tears.
Yeah.
She's like, you don't understand, the professor with the top hat, girlfriend.
Yeah, but Curiousville, I like the village.
Yeah, the plot, like, Curious Village has a very good vibe. Really, all of those games have very good vibes. Like, even Diabolical Box, because that's the one where you're on a train for most of it, I think.
You're on a train for, like, the good, maybe, like, the first third?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, then Unwound Future just rules. And then, like, the prequel trilogy is... I feel like the prequel trilogy starts to peter out. Still good stuff. I really hope the new Layton game's good.
Yeah, me too. That's what I'm hoping for, because I was a little like worried about whether or not going back to this game, it would be good. It would hold up, and it absolutely does. And of course, that music is unbeatable.
Oh my god! Yeah, I'm literally Googling on my phone. Do I do this?
It's cheaper to get all three of them in one go. I will say that.
Or I could get it with Play Pass on Android, but maybe I'll do the free month of Play Pass and mess around with Curious Village. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. You can join us next week where unless you send us a bunch of listener mail, we're gonna have to find something else to talk about. Then we'll brainstorm, come back at you with a new plan, or you can send in some listener mail to connectivity@nintendoreport.com. John and Alex, thank you so much for joining me tonight, and we'll talk to y'all next week. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.